things. I don't know if people on that side have a good view. Are you okay? Anything? I don't know if we have from the department. Can you share my name?
we are held in agreement.
You see, that hasn't been agreed to by the working group. We might need to. we might be called tomorrow evening to. I imagine that would be a problem. I think what we need to do at this point is just report that. I've been given the mandate to sit with the drafters after today to finalize a draft on which all of the options are included. Clearly today in our discussion, if there are different options that you would want to be drafted, you need to say so that we can review it for the purposes of what I will also try and do is I will try and be in touch with various people on the recess. As we bring the final process to check that their options are properly worded and so on and take whatever changes. So that in essence, when you get back, there won't be any problems with the draft that you have in front of you. All of the options must be there. Okay. So for all of this,
in the Office of the Chief Justice must assign an appropriate number of personnel from the staff in the Office of the Chief Justice, one of whom shall be designated as the Secretary of the Commission, to provide administrative support to the Commission. Subject to Section 36, the Secretary, under the supervision and control direction of the Chief Justice or any judge designated by the Chief Justice, must A. provide secretarial and administrative services to the Commission, the Committee, and any tribunal. B. Court all records of matters dealt with by the Commission in terms of this Act to be safeguarded. C. Maintain the Register of Judges' Financial Interests, Section 13.1. D. Maintain a register of all complaints dealt with in terms of this chapter. That this chapter, of course, is wrong. such functions that might from time to time be prescribed, and it generally performs such a material and administrative tasks related to the work of the commission, committee, or any tribunal, as may be from time to time directed by the Chief Justice or the judge, designated by the Chief Justice. And three other personnel of the Secretariat must, under the supervision, control, and direction of the Secretary, assist the Executive Secretary in the performance of the functions referred to in subsection 3, which that is, that cannot be correct.
Okay, so basically, let's start with some of the issues that don't pertain here so far as relates to the Secretary. And I think you must also have a look at the legislation governing these other categories of things, MPs and executives and so on. Because I think that there's specific powers and functions given to the registrar that are just not contained in something that says maintain the register of judges' interests referred to in 31. Doesn't really go much further than that. And clearly, unless we're thinking that all of these functions will be in the regulations again, which doesn't really help us because we're legislating blindly really at the end of the day. So let's talk about the role and function of the register and what we think must be at least the minimum in here to actually accord this particular position a degree of authority that would actually make this mechanism work.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to know the Executive Secretary in the Office of the Chief Justice, is that an existing post? Is there a body in there that they search and work? Or is that the new position? Is that really the register that you are looking for?
Yeah, it's an existing post that she has in the Office of the Chief Justice. So it's a counterpart of the Chief of Staff.
So this will just give that person more functions added to what is currently there?
Yes.
Okay. So, look, the first issue is clearly there's a provision that says maintain the register. But nobody, I mean, I don't know how it works here, but in Mr. Landers would be, and he's not here today, but from what I can tell, there is a register. In other words, what we do, we fill in forms. You know, and then these forms get relayed into a register. And nobody's opening a register. Nobody's been given, we can maintain a register, but nobody actually establishes the register. So I think the one issue that we must actually deal with is the creation of a register. So somebody has to create it, then only can you maintain it. So that's your first thing. Then obviously record in that register the details provided by judges in the form. I think we conflate the issue. I think this is what Dr. Dalcourt is trying to say is we're asking the registrar to register these interests, but we nowhere give the obligation on judges to say, fill out these forms. So, you know, is the registrar now going to go around to each judge and say, just tell me quickly what I'm filling the register? And clearly that's wrong. So we'll need to refine this mechanism to add those things. Entries in the register. I mean, obviously, you need a provision that says the register must be updated every year. We don't have that provision here. So judges must be under an obligation to fill out these pro forma forms, which must be, obviously, you can have the form in regulations, and I think that's the other issue, is to, you know, the forms that we get, it stipulated what that form looks like, what it contains. And so I think we need to get a mirror image of what we've got in the Members of Parliament legislation and do something similar, because that form is regulated. It's is content is regulated. What is public, what is private is regulated in those regulations. And I wouldn't be surprised whether the pro forma form is actually found in the regulations itself. Something like that would need to be done, and clearly that can be done in the regulations, that you actually stipulate in the regulations how that form is actually going to look, what its contents will be, which part must be in the public part, which part must be in the private. All of those things are not here. Then, when you have to stipulate somewhere in this legislation, Mr. Zalanda, that judges will be under an obligation to fill out that form, they will be under an obligation to renew it every year. Then you have to have a concomitant clause that says the registrar must therefore update that information on the register every year. So that there's somebody reading this legislation can understand what happens in the process. If a document is not sufficiently filled up, or if there is perhaps a page missing or something of that sort, the registrar must clearly have the ability and the authority to go back to the judge and say, could you please fill out this part? You haven't filled out this part. Or you've incorrectly stated some of your details. Could you please rectify that? So there must be that authority. Otherwise, the person doesn't have that authority at all. For example, in the issue that we are dealing with very succinctly is the issue of Section 11. So if somebody says, I'm a retired judge, and I've gotten 20,000 rand for 2 days sitting as an arbitrator, case X versus Y, and you don't present the necessary written permission that you had from the minister to act in that position in terms of Section 11, then the registrar should be able to go and say, could you please give me that information to attach to the form? So those things can't be left to regulations clearly. Or if we do, then we need to have at least some broad empowering provisions in the legislation to say that the person will act as a registrar with all the powers and functions of that stipulated in regulations, which must include, number one, the power to open the register, to maintain the register, to update the register, to review the register, to require somebody to fill out the forms and scrutinize the forms, and to then when it comes to the confidential section, which is something that we raise as well, is who has access to the confidential portion. Because clearly, as Dr. Delport says quite rightly, is if you don't have a mechanism where some institution or some structure actually has access to that confidential information, well, then you might as well just scrap the whole mechanism. So, and the body that has that can either be your JSC as a whole, or you could just say the Chief Justice, Registrar and the Chief Justice, and maybe the chairperson of the committee, that's going to be the Deputy Chief Justice. So that there is that aspect to it as well. And then clearly if there are I'm not sure what the legislation here says with MPs, for example, but I imagine that in the confidential section, if you found that a judge had ruled in favor of Mercedes-Benz, for example, let me not use manufacturer Y, then and you then see in the confidential section that the person's wife was given a house in the Bahamas by company Y, what do you do with that information? I mean, surely that information can't remain confidential for all intents and purposes under those circumstances. I'm sure that there are provisions there in the existing making the decision comes to our staff. If there's clearly, you know, a link, then clearly that information should stop being confidential at some point and certainly be served before the JSC in terms of the whole charges, or certainly that committee when it comes to laying charges and complaints and stuff. So that whole regime needs to be stipulated, and then I think there must be, at the very least, be some guidance as to what goes in the confidential part and what goes in the public part. Because remember, yesterday we had this discussion about the Section 11 application. If somebody wants to go and do extra work, those applications, I think, we quite clearly and unanimously said that those things must be for public consumption. I mean, why should you decide that you want to go and do extra work and that must be suddenly confidential? For what reason? So, clearly your Section 11 applications must be in your public part, whereas certainly your family and your spouse and so on, those things can be in your confidential. So, broad guidelines as to what should happen here. Have I covered members? I think, oh yes, in terms of what is registrable assets. Again, I find that what we talk about is members' registrable interests. That doesn't really give any guideline as to what that could be. For example, the issue of gifts. We haven't stipulated around gifts. Is that a registrable interest? And clearly, I can't read that into the concept of registrable interest. Gifts, travel, hospitality, those kinds of issues, I think we need to give broad guidance as to what should be registrable interest. Okay. What else, members? Directorships, we've got all of that stuff stipulated in. And I don't think that we can necessarily be exhausted in the legislation, but I do think that we need to be exhausted.
Yours is all in the code of conduct. All those things are dealt with in the code, not legislation, it's called the code. So if it's been dropped by the ethics committee, then I've got a copy of the confidential or the registered form as well, but I will relook it and see if we can model it as far as possible on this requirement here. But just for instance, sake, I see remunerated employment outside of Parliament as part of an confidential part or is it the chair employment outside directorship, partnership, member, consultancy, companionship, all of those things form part of the confidential part.
Except that what happens there is that you get permission firstly from the political party to do that stuff. So already there you have access to somebody. And that clearly means that your political party will know that you have an interest in, let's say, Telkom or whatever. And depending on where you then get deployed as in your committees and so on, that is then taken into account because somebody knows about it. Then you have also access to that part by the ethics committee and your registrar. So in that sense, it becomes, but remember, again, we mustn't try and conflate what happens on the bench to what happens here. Firstly, we're not judges for life, number one. I mean, we're certainly not MPs for life. Secondly, the issue is we don't adjudicate directly between disputants, respondents and applicants and so on. That happens on a day-to-day basis on the bench. So I think we must, and certainly, I mean, I think that there must be a confidential part and perhaps we should look at, you know, what is and what isn't. But I think that the details of it can be done in regulations, and in any case, the Chief Justice and the Minister are going to consult on those issues. But certainly in terms of broad guidelines, I think that the legislation shouldn't necessarily be silent on the broad guidelines. One thing that I think we need to specify is the Section 11 thing, because that is a specific issue that we raised yesterday and so on. So the Section 11 thing will specify. We must say, for example, if the judge has received any gift of hospitality and so on, that must be in the public spot. But when it comes to directorships and so on, we can look at that and see whether, in fact, there is a possibility of saying that certainly the application to do the work must be in the public part, but perhaps the remuneration that they receive and so on, that can go into the confidential part. The only thing we're interested in, members of the public, is that they have those directorships. We're not really interested in, perhaps, the amount of remuneration and the amount of benefits and so on, that can be kept confidential. So it's really a question of, but as I say, I don't expect that what we're doing now is to go list, draft a list as to what should be private and what should be confidential, but merely to do broad guidelines, I think, in this regard. And bearing in mind, of course, the stuff is not going to come to Parliament for approval, the regulations.
The regulation could come to Parliament.
No.
Yeah, well,
Delegated legislation, you see. So, it won't come to Parliament for approval.
Minister, I think one matter of principle, I think you have raised against to your whole management of the initially, in your earlier session, I think we did provide for a register within the office of the Chief Justice, a register will have this responsibility. Because obviously, the Act of only put it on a very responsibility attendant who will have the capacity to accept the function. And I think that pushing was watered down to what we had. And when we research it, what we have here, we basically have the executive secretary being assigned the responsibility of appointing a secretary in charge of this function. And this secretary, in terms of the understanding, and it was watered down through the negotiation. Because at that time, the register was somebody who was going to have some form of own authority and have reporting like the minister, etc. And I think that would have done. But the person who put it here will not be able to assume their responsibility. For example, those of holding up the judges and making sure that there are the right information. The person will basically keep sending it. So it's somebody been far down from the legislature. And I think it may be necessary to see whether there will be an opportunity of putting this function in the secretary or establishing a register for purpose of this function with specific legislative power in this situation so that it can be implemented. But as it comes to sense now, if somebody who is basically operates under the directives of the secretary and with no kind of strong stated full application. Also to highlight that the office of the chief justice is still full. The only entrenched position that was in the good service country. There was an understanding from the beginning that the position will only be confirmed once there's clarity in terms of how the judicial situation is going to turn out and how complaints are going to turn out. Because we are praying from the beginning that if we're going to complete the structure, then that is clearly an expectation that we need to strengthen the office in terms of judicial education and this deal we deal with. So we pulled back the housing for this process. Then I was saying that it should be possible to release the structure and rather than once you've got a sense how the mission is going to stand out. So this legislation, the judicial will inform the structure of the future. Not the other way around. We don't have this place and the people. And I think if the duty is to get somebody with that kind of authority, it should then inform the arrangement of the to get that kind of
what do you members feel about this? You see, because my feeling is that there's some sense in saying that over and above the the executive secretary, which, as you know, a lot of what the Chief Justice is going to be doing in the future is going to require a lot of administrative support. And to lodge all of these functions in one person, remember this person is also meant to provide assistance to the JSC and so on. The idea, and what from what we hear Mr. Kosana saying is that because the complement of staff in the Chief Justice's office is not finalized, there's still possibly room for having a specific person attached to that office who can fulfill the role and function of a registrar. That person, for example, could provide the kind of administrative support that is required also when it comes to tribunals, when it comes to the complaints committee, the the complaints committee, conduct, the judicial conduct. As opposed to just saying it's the executive secretary at that time. And I mean, my view is that if it's possible to have a registrar attach that person to the office of the Chief Justice, under working under the authority, of course, always, of the Chief Justice, then there shouldn't be too much of a problem with that. What are people's views? I mean, confidential part. No. Clearly they will need to have insight into the confidential part, but I'm also thinking that depending on whether we're going with the secretary or a registrar with a different individual, then the registrar will open and maintain. As far as the confidential section is concerned, my sense is that it should be only available to that person with the registrar, which is the same with our case. And in our case, it's the Committee on Ethics that has access to the confidential part. Is there anybody else that has access to the confidential part as far as parliamentarians are concerned? I don't know. So it is just that instrument. And so the registrar clearly has a relationship with that committee, reports to that committee and acts under the direction and authority of that committee. Likewise, the registrar here would have to act in accordance with the direction of the Chief Justice, who may or may not be the chairperson of that judicial conduct committee. Because remember, they're the ones that receive complaints, if you're with me. And that's where your initiating spark of a disciplinary mechanism actually happens. So my view is it's that committee acting under the chairpersonship of the Chief Justice, which means, of course, then we might have to then go for that clause that says that the Chief Justice is the chair and he designates the deputy. Those circumstances. Would that be? Okay. All right. So let's then have a clause that says that there will be an office of a registrar of judges' interests lodged in the office of the Chief Justice, who reports to the Judicial Conduct Committee, and which obviously we'll then have to go for the option that says that the Chief Justice chairs that committee. Huh? The reports to the Chief Justice and the Judicial Conduct Committee. And then all of these other things in terms of the powers and functions. I mean, I think it's important to say that the person has the authority to go and ask somebody to fill out. And then have a general thing which says that and conduct and carry out any instruction pertaining to the maintenance and updating of the register as instructed by the Chief Justice, kind of thing, or any direction given by the Chief Justice in regard to the maintenance and updating of the register. all of this help. Questions, Mr. Delano? So you're going to be drafted. So I think members are uncomfortable with having a kind of a mirror thing. Obviously, they're going to have to be some changes and so on, but by and large, a kind of mirror interface with what we have currently with regard to the executive and parliament. And then, of course, you'll still have the regulations, which will deal with all of those other issues as well that we're not able to exhaustively deal with in the legislation. Then, clearly, in terms of a breach of lodging, actually lodging the register or the form, updating the register and so on, those things pertaining to E must still be there. 3E, in other words. All of that will still pertain.
So, tickled me here is 3F Roman 3. I'm just trying to envision a scenario where the judge will actually need to complicate the confidentiality because the complaints referred to in 14.1 are all complaints against judges. I'm not sure that is necessarily what the object will be of Roman 3.
Well, I mean, you could have a breach of confidentiality by the Judicial Conduct Committee, for example, which basically would consist of judges. So that's your one area. But secondly, it could be against the register or any staff member in the office.
Not a complaint. There's a procedure for lodging a complaint in terms of 14.1.
Are you reading complaint in terms of this legislation?
Well, a complaint in terms of 14.1 is a complaint against the judge.
Ah, I see, yes. Okay.
Just wondering whether that 3 shouldn't be covered elsewhere.
Well, you would keep that there for the purposes of it being a judge in case it is a judge. And then I guess what you would do is you would have a separate confidentiality thing. And I think we have something along the lines of that in this thing. Perhaps later on, where we provide sanctions for... Do we have it here? Protection of confidential information. Maybe that's where you would want to bring something there in relation to staff and... any breach and so on, because that would be a criminal matter as well. But the issue shouldn't it just be a criminal matter if there's a breach of confidentiality? Why should it be a matter of a complaint against the judicial officer? Because there, I imagine, if somebody is found guilty of having breached the confidentiality clauses here, and the person is a judge, then this person will be charged under the code of conduct for...
I must say, I find it very, very unlikely that one would ever lodge a complaint against the judge on this ground.
Well, maybe you can put that in big brackets and then the committee can decide when we sit down and decide on the next draft. Let's do that.
Thank you, Chair. And another point, liability. Are we going to have liabilities also as a registrable interest? We leave it out to the committee.
But it's definitely in the draft that we've got at the moment, the idea of having using our interest because it's an interest might affect your perception of it.
Maybe that's why when I think the concern is to really provide a guide in this legislation as to what registrable interest means. So maybe we can even start looking at, in including in the definition something to the effect that says registrable interest means something including or is including da 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 da, and so it's not exhaustive, and then the regulations can take over and supplement if there are things that we haven't clearly stipulated. But that gives you a broad guide to what is and what isn't. When we have, for example, travel and hospitality staff, gifts, all of those are not necessarily financial assets. That's what they give the financial interest, whatever. Certainly not obvious, and an argument can be made that they're not, in which case you don't want that to happen. But I think the view from the committee is essentially that whatever it is that we have in this other register of ours should necessarily also be part and parcel of
I just wanted to remark upon that.
I thought you did. I mean, I always talk about my bonds. You've got that from international precedents.
My sense is not that
cabinet has to register the liabilities.
The cabinet members, they have to register the liabilities. I thought you were referring to our, because we also have to.
So you people have to do it.
No, not the liability, but cabinet, that's what you said.
Cabinet's got it, and you've got it in international precedent, that's what you said. Then I think we must put it in the definition. Well, you raised it, Mr. Gilbert. Were you wanting to argue for or against it?
Well, it's very relevant if a judge has liabilities of millions.
Okay, so then you've got it. We want some kind of a definition to give broad guidance, but it's not necessarily exhaustive, is what we're saying. And then the regulations, and when they negotiate in the regulations, what else must be registered, then they can possibly come up with other things and so on. Okay? All right. I think we're done with that part. Lots of drafting to do there, Mr. And I don't know if we mentioned it, but the one aspect must be the obligation firstly to fill out the form on the part of individual judges, and then also to update it on a year-to-year basis. Yeah? Last opportunity. Anybody want to talk about the register now? Okay, so we'll put those. Sorry, Emma.
I think that much of what we've been talking about now will go into the code of conduct. And not necessarily into the bill, although there will be a lot of information in this particular piece of legislation.
You know what,
and then one needs to look at the code of conduct properly and see whether much of what we talk about here could be included in there and in the bill itself.
You know, the way I envisage it, rather, would be that in the regulations will be stipulated what you have to do and what your obligations, responsibilities are as an individual judge. So the detail of it will be in the regulations. And then in your code of conduct, you don't necessarily need to then stipulate all of those things again. All you'll do in your code of conduct is say any breach of any legal obligation as a judge will mean that you are contravening the code of conduct. Do you see what I mean? So that will be kind of all that is from the app. Because remember, the negotiating detail is really in the regulations where the Chief Justice and the Minister are going to negotiate what goes into those regulations, and I imagine those will be pretty comprehensive. What we're doing in the legislation is giving them a guide as to what should be in in that regulation. It can come to add other things, of course. But the bare minimum, we stipulate the guidelines here. They then do it in the regulations, and then my sense is that the code of conduct will just say, if you violate any of these things that apply to you, you're contravening the code of conduct. Okay? We are now under part 2.
Part 3, that is in the procedures. Okay. Lodging of complaints.
Just go through those things that we've amended. We've been through this thing once before, members, as you would recall. So it's just the stuff that we've asked you to amend and so on. And then members must feel free if there's stuff that we're not dealing with at this stage and we want to raise. Please just raise it now, because remember I said to you we're going to then compile something finally. But you'll also be at liberty, of course, to give me a shout of the phone in the next few days, should you have missed something and so on, and you want to see it on the document, okay? So there's nothing there, Mr. Delanga, under lodging of the complaint?
Not really. I think two I've said have said the complaint is lodged, or rather is lodged with the chairperson and not referred.
Okay.
Judge, just to put that back to, there was nothing under 15 that I recorded, and then you can go straight to 16. And in clause 16, I've rearranged a bit. If you look here at the margin, you'll see all the parts that I've omitted, that I've deleted. Maybe in section 16, 16, 16, if the chairperson is satisfied that in the event of a valid complaint being established, it's likely to lead to a finding by the commission that the respondent suffers from an incapacity, is grossly incompetent, or is guilty of gross misconduct, as in the section 44A, the chairperson must refer the complaint to the committee in order to consider whether it should recommend to the commission that the complaint should be investigated and reported on by a tribunal, and be in writing inform the respondent of the complaint. Two, if the complaint is referred to the committee in terms of sub 1 or 17.4c or 17.5c3, the chairperson must determine the time and the place, etc. The rest is all the same. So what I've done really is I've collapsed 1 and 2 into each other to some degree. So avoiding the repetition of it, informing the respondent of the complaint, and again informing the respondent of the complaint and responding in writing.
Anybody have a problem with that? We move on.
There's one other change there that's not really clear. You'll see two. The cross-reference for 17.4c, that is new, wasn't there. That is as a result of, in issue 17, you might recall that we've decided that members will recall 17 is two possible scenarios. If you have an inquiry, formal, or you just do it on the paper. When you do it on the paper alone, you've added that third option of recommending the appointment of a tribunal. That would also amount to a referral, and that's why it was necessary to insert 17 for C there.
Okay.
Then, in 4, sub 4, sub 4A says refer the complaint to the chairperson for an inquiry 13, section 17.2. Now, there used to be another A, and we'll see it in the margin there. It used to be A, dismiss the complaint. So there were three options. You could dismiss the complaint, you could refer it to the chairperson for an inquiry, or you could recommend to the tribunal that the complaint should be investigated by the tribunal. Then you and possibly other members of the committee raised the issue whether one, if the complaint is dismissed at that stage, whether there should be a right of appeal to the complainant. And with hindsight, I am of the view that one should actually not give the option for dismissing a complaint at this stage, bearing in mind that the complaint was lodged firstly with the chairperson. And then the chairperson is satisfied that in the event of a valid complaint being established. Now at this stage, there is no, this is all about considering that what will be the position be if a valid complaint is established. There's nowhere in this sort of value judgment being made as to is there in fact merit to the complaint or not. This is
so the option there is really just to see whether further inquiry is necessary.
Yes, necessary. And I don't think you can without at least looking at the merit of the case.
And then in any case you have the complication of saying, well then the complainant can appeal against that dismissal and so on.
It could be very easy to appeal because I wouldn't have considered the merit of the complaint at all.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. You've already got somebody saying that this is not just a small thing. It's been taken to the committee and then the committee says, well, we've got two options. You need more information, in which case you go for the inquiry, or you say, look, this thing is so serious, go to the tribunal, to the JSC to recommend a tribunal. Okay?
And then, I'm not sure that I think we've substituted investigation for inquiry. I'm not sure that it's... Yes, before A reads the further complaint to the chairperson for an inquiry, referring to 17.2. Again, when we get to 17.2, you might recall that we've had a discussion about the further investigation or inquiry, and we've changed 17.2 to inquiry.
Right.
I think that deals with 16.2. 17, starting at the heading, already changed from investigation instead of investigation of serious, etc. That can change the inquiry into serious on a feature or complaint. On page 12, you'll find three instances in the margin there where investigating litigation at every time we substitute it for inquiry. Sub 4, you remember also the discussion around whether it's appropriate to use terminology such as find guilty, etc. Sub 4 is my proposal really in B, just to say that find that the complainant has been, that the complaint has been established and that the respondent has behaved in a manner which is unbecoming of the judge and imposing of the legal steps first in sub 8. And that is really repeated. Just to relate that chair to 17.1a, for example, it says if the chairperson is satisfied that in the event of a valid complaint being established, this might amuse you, one can take this as far as the original judicial officer's amendment goals that was introduced way back in 2001. And the wording used in that book is also about the complaint being established. This is finding. I think I'll leave it at that for the time being. So I think I might want to.
This is the one where the JSC submission has taken umbrage at the language as well.
Yes.
And this is the one that we're looking at. Saying. Look, I don't have a problem with removing guilty. I think that the real issue is we need to find other words to say that the person's, that the complainant's complaint is valid and therefore the person is in breach of whatever. And this wording, is, on the face of it, seems okay to me, but members can still look at it and propose any other wording that you think may be better, okay?
At the bottom of 12, at Roman 2, you'll see exactly the same thing that you made there. And if we turn over to the next phrase, Chair, sub 9. Now, we've got that fairly comprehensively. Maybe I should just read it very quickly. Used to be that proviso. You remember that remedies can be imposed in terms of 8 EDF, and every time there's a proviso that is cited, it must come from a list of approved remedies by the Minister of Justice, financial indicators for the state. So I turn it around to say that the state shall not be responsible for any expenditure incurred as a result of or associated with any remedy referred to as such HDE or F, unless such remedy was selected from a list of approved remedies or services compiled from time to time by the Minister in consultation with the Chief Justice, and then only to the extent set out in that list.
I think that's better, which then opens the doors for other remedies to be imposed at the expense of the respondent as such. Because I don't think you necessarily want to close the door on those possibilities.
Exactly, Chief, yes. Especially when it comes to seeing things as such as appropriate counseling and so on.
Yeah.
I mean,
So to the list doesn't mean that
I think some of the respondents might actually be in a position to afford
Absolutely. Members, I think that's fine. What do people think? I think that's a good way of dealing with it, and then it leaves the door open for all kinds of creative sanctions as well. Okay. All right, next.
Then I think, Chair, that the consideration by the Committee of the Appeal, I didn't find a need to take many changes there. In fact, on page 14, there's some very consequential amendments required in subsequent investigation. There's one respondent, that's a clear respondent, that's more or less in the middle, about the judge concerned.
Yeah, I think the respondent is the better word, because in any case, you've defined it as having
this. Yeah, makes a lot more sense too, but that is really all that there is.
All right. Next page. You've taken out investigation and inquiry under part 4. Okay, next page.
16. Yeah, 16 is once again that issue of the remedies. I just brought that proviso in line with the previous provision. So my amendment might be called, this is where the Judicial Service Commission itself now imposes some of those sanctions. In other words, if the commission is considering reporting and deciding that it's not impeachable, but they do want to act, and then it can also impose those remedies.
But what was the fact was deleted? It seems different. It's likely to result in expenditure. Okay.
It used to read here. The provider used to read that provided that any remedy imposed in terms of this subsection that is likely to result in expenditure by the state must be selected from a list of approved remedies compiled.
I just said I see the wording looks like it's been deleted in 6, but actually that's because you've replaced the added a new thing to the sequence.
Fallen away from the wording.
Okay. Yeah. No, that tracking is kind of funny sometimes. Okay.
21, there's nothing of consequence there, just two officers in judge.
Judicial officer substituted by judge. Okay, that's good. Right. Next page.
22, that's the composition of the tribunal. And what I've done there is I've deleted that part that says at least one of whom is a judge, that is in 3A. There are at least two members remaining on the tribunal must continue its function. For the simple reason that the tribunal will always comprise three members, of whom two will be judges. If one of the members are not apt or not available, obviously one of the others will always be a judge. And if there's nothing to do with the same, at least one of them is a judge.
Okay.
Moving 23, nothing has changed there. 24. Also as was, same for 25, 26 is consequential, replacing judicial officer by judge, 27 nothing changed, also not 28, 29, 30, 31, 32 and 33, and 34. In fact, I think we can go straight to 37. That's the third clause where I've actually made changes again. But I must get back to you if there are still some issues outstanding.
Okay.
37 is the secretariat of the commission, and I think we probably not even need to look at it, because it will change. I do think it will gather the registrar and will make sure it is aligned what they're saying.
You will, of course, will have a section that's dedicated to the secretary of the commission, but I think we need to reformulate some of its functions in so far as pertains to the tribunal, for example. I think there the registrar is more appropriate.
Yes, no, I don't think it will probably not be dealt with here.
Members? What kind of broad mandates you're giving to the lender, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, the issue, before I forget, I said that we need to get back to, or I still want to go back to another issue, and that was the involvement of the judicial officer himself or herself. You will recall we had a discussion about an earlier draft of 2003 relating to summoning the judicial officer and making or forcing him or her to actually give evidence or answer questions by the tribunal, etc. I must still get around to that part. And we also decided that 58 is rather over harsh. One can actually stand that down. I did undertake to do a little bit of more research and see if we can find out.
That's the confidentiality issue.
That is correct. It's a bit of overkill at the moment. I think that's what that's getting on.
I think basically what you need is a general clause applicable both to judicial officers and non-judicial officers as far as confidentiality. And then I think confidentiality must be, it must pertain. You see, I mean, those issues that we are saying, what is confident, what isn't confidential, and so on. So I think we need to be a little more specific. For example, certainly the confidential part of the register will be affected. And then
specific a suggestion by yourself, also that one should confidential information, and we should also have confidential documents.
Okay, so you'll give us, I'll just say, redraft here. Members want to add anything here just in terms of stuff that we need to consider? Remember the discussion that we had was that you can't just say that you're going to provide a sanction to anybody who sits on the commission that discloses any document and so on. It's confidential. I mean, somebody has to say this is confidential, and who makes that call would probably be the chief justice. So we're distributing this to the commission with this confidential. Because remember, the other things that members of the commission have in their position as a natural consequence of their positions there would be people's CDs and things. Now, would that necessarily fall under this thing? To me,
prevent things from falling through the cracks so that we've got more than one person making notes. Go back to 33. 33, there's just an incorrect reference to the Magistrates Commission, but you also, the committee suggested that we add a Roman 3 or other relevant documents. That is all the things that are submitted. Must go ahead, that is.
So, anybody wants to add anything lastly towards this discussion? Okay, so as indicated to you, we'll then sit down and do a draft which will essentially contain all of the options and try and refine it to such an extent that members are able to actually vote on that draft. If there are things that you want to bring to my attention and Mr. Delanda's attention prior to us getting back, please feel free to do so. Either give Mr. Delanda a call or myself. If you sat down, looked at the thing and said, oh, I forgot to mention this, that's quite all right. And real time incorporated into our into the draft. And then when you come back, we will deal with that document, hopefully. Either with me as the chair or Mr. Karim as the chair, one way or the other.
Okay. I'm very sorry, can I just make one further note? In 25, we also wanted an option if we make rules or make a stipulation that rules must be made within a certain number of months after the commencement of the Act.
5, where is it? Sorry, say again, Mr. Kalango.
25, after sub 4, it's on page 18. There should be an option to when these rules should be made by the tribunal. Those are the rules made by the tribunal. We just want an option because I don't think there was consensus as to when should necessarily anticipate the tribunal being appointed. But the question was also should there be ad hoc rules or should one provide for who wanted an option.
Yes.
But
you're going to come back.
And then. In 23, this is very small. In 23.1, you should consider where it says, in the prescribed manner and form, establish and maintain a list of persons, and then insert who are not judicial officers, they have been approved by the chief justice. I think that was fairly unanimous. Not the only one having notes on various copies of the same document.
You know, one of the things that we must consider in this regard as well is the possibility of magistrates. Given that one of the things that, given the discussions of the weekend particularly, one of the issues that was raised is a single disciplinary mechanism as well. If you say judicial officers here, you include magistrates.
You cannot be able to then sit in judgment and the judge is specific like a suspect.
No, but if, for example, you have a magistrate who is being disciplined, you then would want the third person to be a magistrate.
Yes, I do think that is an inherently often, but that is a different legislative process.
And for the purpose of this legislation, it seems to me that. I guess what you would do under those circumstances, the Chief Justice would merely then appoint, or whichever commission will appoint a tribunal that is different, but along similar...
Yes, we've actually had earlier drafts.
Okay, so then it would be judicial officers that you then want to say were not judicial officers.
We've actually had a separate tribunal bill that you might recall here that dealt with that.
No, I recall that. We had wanted to streamline those things. So that's why we now have to take it out. It becomes a bit junky. But I think we will be able to do it. We'll rectify all of those things. And in any case, you'll have a similar mechanism, but you'll have a differently composed tribunal when it comes to magistrates. Okay. So that's that. Let me just, in anticipation of this being my last opportunity to chair this august body of human beings, let me just say that it's been an absolute privilege and a wonderful experience for me to preside over each and every one of you. I do want to express my fondest wishes to all of you, but also to extend my fondest wishes to all of you, but also to extend my appreciation to every single one of you. You've made it an absolutely marvelous experience for me, and you've supported, and even when we've disagreed in this committee, it's always been, I think, ultimately in the interest of passing good laws, making good policy. And in a spirit that is befitting, I think, of the institution that we're in, and befitting ultimately of the people that we represent, the large clause in the charity of citizens out there. And I do want to thank you all very much for your cooperation, for your friendship, for your support, and last but not least, for the very good sense of humor that we've always been able to maintain under very difficult times sometimes as well. So thank you very much for the opportunity, and hopefully we'll be able to say goodbye properly at the function tomorrow, and I do hope that everyone's going to make it. The invitations, we've had a bit of problems trying to secure venues and so on, but Loretta's sending out formal invitations to you today, including you. So please find some time to stay after the house tomorrow. We won't be sitting too long. I do know that people have other commitments, and it is the day on which we expect it to arrive. It would be very nice if we can all come and have some supper, and we can spend a few minutes together. Dr. Douglas.
I would very much like to say something. I think on behalf of the opposition. but will there be a formal opportunity maybe tomorrow night, or is it? Because then I don't want to tell the joke that I'm sorry. Because then you won't laugh tomorrow evening. No, I think in a more sort of intimate way here, thank you for your leadership. Thank you for the way in which you dealt with the opposition, allowed the opposition to play a constructive, hopefully, role. And that we could always, despite differences, remain colleagues. It will go down in my book as one of my pleasant experiences in my second life in politics here in Parliament. And I think it's a pity that you will move on. I hope the remuneration will be higher, more, and the status be at a higher level. We will miss you. Thank you.
We'll have an opportunity, as I say, tomorrow to say our final goodbyes, but in the meantime, I hope that you all will stay well, and I know that I will miss you all, and I hope that from time to time we will still get together and have some tea and share a few jokes and stuff. And because Mr. Yadav asked me very nicely, I'm going to tell a joke, but I'm going to put this off.